Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
WGR.
It's hard to find an expert more dedicated than John Clayton.
Sports Radio 550.
He's the consummate pro.
It's John Clayton.
And Mom, I'm done with my segment.
With Shope and the Bulldog.
John Clayton is being brought to you by Northwest Bank, increasing the value of you. And by Goya. If it's Goya, it has to be good.
Our pleasure, as always, to bring on John Clayton, joining us on the West Her Hotline. John, I'm with Sal Capaccio today. Sal, I think you know. I mean, you guys have interacted before. Bill's sideline reporter.
Hello, Sal.
John, among his jobs, Seahawks sideline reporter. Yeah. So you guys can talk about.
We're sideline brethren, John. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, that's right. I get the most unique job, though, because I do the opponent's team sidelines. Jen Mueller does the sidelines for the Seahawks, and of course, I do the opposing teams because, one, it keeps me neutral, which I think is important as a reporter, and then number two, it gets me more knowledge of the other team that I can start doing things for the Washington Post and other entities.
Very good, boy. That's good thinking.
I feel weird, John, going over to the other team's sideline, even though, like, last week, for example, Saquon Barkley went out, and there was nothing wrong with him, but It looked like he was speaking with a trainer, and I thought to myself, I should go over there and check that out. But I'm on the Bills sideline, on the Bills sideline reporter, and I figure they're probably not going to want me hanging around the back of their bench at all, so I kind of feel like I'm in a weird spot there.
I can understand that. I'll give you an example. In the preseason finale against Oakland, it just started pouring rain. And the security guards, it was a home game in Seattle, and the security guards wanted to take care of me, and they're going to give me a little cover-up thing. But unfortunately, it was all Seahawk colors. And I said, I can't stand here on the sideline, you know, wearing Seahawk gear and trying to report on a neutral basis. So, yeah, I can understand that because you have to watch it. And, you know, certain teams don't get it. But I guess what helps me is, you know, having 22 years at ESPN and being just to every city and every game and all that stuff, you know, that kind of gives me the chance. And then the other thing is, you know, one of the keys to being a sideline reporter is that you share with all the other sideline reporters. And so, you know, I'm sharing with whoever's there for the network. I'm sharing with the people. It would be on the Bills. I'll be sharing with you anything I know, because, you know, if you're doing the opposing teams, you're going to get a little bit less time on the air, but more time to share and gather more information.
Yeah. Sal and I don't know if we've ever talked about this exactly, but I'm also very weird about the logo. Yeah. Like, Bills close at work day. Like, I feel like I can't do it. And, I mean, I'm not in any sort of official capacity in that way. Right. I'm probably way too uptight about it. Here I am sitting with Sal, John, and, like, we've got a Bills trip we're giving away. I'm wearing a Borussia Dortmund soccer jacket. Like, I just cannot. If I go out of town, I'll wear the logo. Because then I want to be like, oh, Buffalo. Well, like the guy who called in and said he was at Disney World.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, like, for example, my first year of covering the league was 1972, and I was in high school covering for the St. Mary's Daily Press. And so the Immaculate Reception happens, and we're in Three Rivers Stadium. I'm in the auxiliary press box, and so Franco literally was running right toward me. And, you know, in the auxiliary press box, you got, reporters who are more fans than reporters, right? So they're all up cheering and stuff like that. I had one of the head PR people in the league standing right behind me, and the first thing that I did is turn to him and I says, hey, is there any way we can see a replay? That's an illegal catch. So I've been neutral since 1972. I mean, here it is, the biggest moment in Steeler history, and I'm calling an illegal catch, which it was.
Yeah, that's I respect this.
That's,
I mean,
that's awesome.
This is kind of how I am too. All right, let's speed it up. Almost 50 years. How about the Bills at 2-0, John? How impressed are you? And I think I may have asked you that last week, even if we did. What do you think after two games?
I'm, I wouldn't say impressed. I think, you know, you take advantage of the winnable games, and certainly, you know, that was a winnable game. The Giants are terrible. And so, and you saw the Jets absolutely collapse. And so, you know, it's almost like trying to judge. Not, I mean, it's a little easier to judge Baltimore. But again, I go back to the topic that I brought up last week. I mean, this all looks to me like 2 years ago when, you know, you don't have more than four playoff teams and everything is wide open. And if you take care of the winning the winnable games, just like the Bills are doing, and that's where I think, you know, Sean McDermott now deserves a lot of credit, because he wins the winnable games. And that was a winnable game because, I mean, the Giants had nothing at wide receiver. They have no pass rush. You know, they're not a very good team. And Eli Manning played bad enough to be benched. So, you know, again, am I impressed? Well, not really. But what I am saying is that, you know, Sean McDermott is a coach that can take these winnable games and put the team in a very good position. That I can be impressed with.
The Jet game will all this year, as long as this year is alive, the Jet game will just look so big. I mean, I thought it then, and I think I will think it all season. Sal, right? Like, if the Jets make a field goal or pull out the game, like they make one play at the end, and we're 1-1, we're like, okay. You know, I think a lot of people would be less, I don't know, focused on the upside, the ceiling for this Bills team, but that isn't what happened, and that's to their credit, you know, at least in part. And so 2-0 with the Bengals in, you can feel like a lot is possible here.
I think what happened, John, is when the schedule came out, people thought there was at least early opportunity for the Bills to get a couple of wins. Whether that's the Jets, Giants, or Bengals, however order that went in, there was opportunity to get to 2-1. But when they won that first one, I think that got people to, okay, well, now there's no excuse to not beat the Giants, and now there's certainly no excuse to not beat the Bengals, and the expectations have clearly risen around this team.
Yeah, but you got to worry a little bit about the Bengals, because I saw them in the opener against Seattle, and even though they laid an egg against San Francisco, they're a little bit better than I anticipated. I mean, the things that look a little bit better is that, you know, Zach Taylor and Andy Dalton look like a winning combination. The coach really puts the quarterback in a good position to win. But the problem that they have is their offensive line's terrible. So that can benefit the Bills because, you know, remember, Zona Williams, the first round picks out for the season. Cordy Glenn, the former Bill, he's got concussion protocol. The first round center they drafted last year is so hurt that he's now a backup. So, and it got, I mean, it's so bad that Andre Smith, the 2009 first-round right tackle from the Bengals, he's now playing left tackle for the second game in his life. And so it all collapsed because they went against Dee Ford and Nick Bosa. And so that's what collapsed the offense. You know, and defensively, they got a pretty good defensive line. They're not great. But, you know, they're a little bit more formidable. But when you think about, you know, going back to that Jet game, that loss is going to put them on a spiral where I think that they're going to be 1-5 and 0-6 and pretty much, you know, open everything up and give the Bills a chance to sweep against Miami and a chance to sweep against the Jets. Because look what's going on with the Jets. Sam Darnold has mono, okay? They have an opening schedule where the only playoff team in the first from last year in the first six games they lost to, which is Cleveland, and that's not a bad team at 7-9. You know, they lose Quincy Enunwa, their best receiver. You know, they've got C.J. Mosley out probably for two games with a groin injury, and it's just a mess right now.
John Clayton with us, Mike Shope and Sal Capaccio, who's in for Bulldog today on WGR. John, there is a ton of news, and a lot of it's at quarterback. You mentioned Darnold, and then upstaged in the same stadium is the Eli Manning news. Are you surprised by that? I mean, we've all just kind of been talking about it being a matter of time, and then the draft pick just accelerates that. Did you think maybe it would be later on when they would do this, or no?
I thought it was going to be later on. I mean, when you saw Daniel Jones play in the preseason, then he played well enough that you knew there was going to be a short leash. I didn't think it was going to be this short because, you know, when you look at it, it's like, okay, you know, Eli, I think, what, averaged 4.8 yards an attempt in the game Sunday. That's horrible. But who's he throwing to? Remember, this is a team that traded away Odell Beckham Jr., Golden Tate's on suspension. You know, Sterling Shepard's been hurt. I mean, he has nobody. I mean, when you start to talk about Benny Fowler being among your top two wide receivers, that's got to be scary. And so then you look at, you know, the defense. I mean, you know, it's so bad that Janoris Jenkins, old Jackrabbit, called everybody out and says, hey, I can't cover guys for 10 seconds. We need a pass rush. Well, they traded away their best pass rusher, Olivier Vernon. So I just think that this could be a disaster, because now what you have is Daniel Jones, overdrafted because he should have been in the teens, not at six, coming out there, going against a blitzing team from Todd Bowles. You got to be kidding. This is horrible.
How about Pittsburgh? You were there and you saw what happened with Roethlisberger. You were on that sideline. I mean, that is a big turn, too. Are you optimistic for them at all with Mason Rudolph?
I'm not optimistic. I think they have a chance. And you can see what they did. They took the tack that I have, that if the only four real playoff teams right now, just right now, are New England, Kansas City, the Chargers, and the Ravens, then they've taken the tack that's like, okay, let's see if we can get the defense better. You know, they took Devin Bush, and they got him, you know, as a first-round pick who's going to be really good. And now you pick up Minka Fitzpatrick, who's a possible Pro Bowl-caliber safety. Now you have nine number ones on your defense. So if you can get that all coming together, then you have a chance to, you know, maybe eke out a wild card. So I think that's what their thinking is, and it's an interesting thought because, you know, Rudolph did a good job. I mean, let's put it this way. If you look at his numbers compared to Ben Roethlisberger, because I think Ben was clearly showing problems with his elbow during the entire first half. Mm-hmm. He only threw for like 75 yards. Rudolph came in the second half, was able to get about 12 completions and 21 attempts, and he was able to get 112 yards. Well, I mean, there's some hope there. But, I mean, you got James Conner with his knee banged up. He's going to play, but he's going to be hurt. And then, you know, so I think they have a chance, but you can't feel optimistic.
Well, here we go, John. The 2018 draft class, as far as quarterbacks are concerned, are in full swing. Now with Mason Rudolph obviously starting as well. Baker, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen starting. That was announced today. Lamar Jackson, though, has been a bit of a revelation the first 2 weeks. What have you seen from the Ravens and Lamar Jackson? Is it sustainable, or is this something that, you know, defensive coordinators will figure out? Because, you know, he came in last year late, the playoff game. There was some, you know, there was some nice plays, but it looked like he was able to be kind of figured out pretty quickly. What are we looking at here?
Well, what you're looking at is, I mean, you don't want to overdo it, because he did it against two of the worst teams in football. I mean, Arizona was the worst team in football last year, and their defense is terrible. And then you look at Miami. I mean, they're biblically bad, because, I mean, there's locusts going around those stadiums, how bad they are. And so, you know, you don't want to overdo it. But then the one thing you have to realize, you know, the guy's had eight starts, and he's won seven games. And again, he may be a one-trick pony in the sense he's more a runner than he is a quarterback, but he's got something going right. But, you know, things will start to catch up to him. But, you know, right now I think you have to start giving him the benefit of the doubt.
There are throws he's making that are unbelievably good. I mean, there are clips from both games where, whether it's the Dolphins, I like biblically bad a lot, by the way.
I like that as well.
Use that again. Mm-hmm. But I'll source you. Errors doesn't matter. Like that, there was a seam pass to Andrews that he threw where you see it from high end zone. It's just super good, you know. So who's out in full force right now are the people who are telling you he was able to do this at Louisville. But, you know, he had enough people last year who really wondered. So that's a very interesting story. As somebody that has money on him to win the NFL MVP this year, well, I guess you'll know right there what I'm rooting for. John, how about
– you know what the scary
– Yes?
I was going to tell you, you know what the scary part about this weekend is, and this week three? This is the youngest quarterback group that's going to start since 1987, because now what you're looking at, Rosen's going to be the 17th quarterback who's starting this week who's 26 or younger. 17, okay? But here's where the problem is. 1987, that was the strike year. I mean, that was replacement players. I mean, you've gone now, 32 years since you've had quarterbacks that are that young. To me, that's scary.
I think it's very exciting. It might be that week three this year is a huge transition moment with Roethlisberger, who's talking about returning next year, and, you know, Breeze will be back, and I don't know about Manning, even Newton, even Luck, you know, went out like he did before the season.
Roethlisberger's, you know, we don't know where his career is going to be. But yet, John, here is Tom Brady still watching all of these young kids who are basically almost his age go out. I mean, it's just amazing. It's incredible watching him do what he's doing when everything seems to be turning over, and yet he's out there playing at his age at the level he's playing at.
Well, the two incredible things is now I've got to take a look, but literally if you put probably Kyler Murray and one of these other rookie quarterbacks and combine the two ages, you know, they may get one or two past Brady. Okay, that's scary. Because, again, it's like, okay, you got a 21 and maybe a 23, so you have combined ages of 44. All right, that's unbelievable. The other thing is unbelievable is now that they got Antonio Brown, you know, here's a team that's always adjusting, always doing different things. You know, they used a lot of, one back, four receiver formations. Now, again, you know they want to be a two-back running team. That's their mission. But now they're trying to almost do some things that they're doing in Arizona with the air raid. And so that's going to be a little bit different. I think they had like about 10 or 11, you know, 10 sets is what they call them, because it's one and a zero tight end. You can understand the zero tight end because Rob Gronkowski's retired. But it's like, wow, that's so different.
You know, what they'll do, and this is, I mean, maybe even too simplistic, but what they'll do is be able to go through almost their entire regular season and show nothing of the sort what they want to be in the playoffs. I mean, whatever.
100%.
This is like the preseason for New England, you know? They'll the preseason teams say, like, well, they don't want to show what they're really going to be about. I mean, the Patriots can go through regular seasons like that, including maybe this one again.
Yeah, they're doing that. They've this morph. They become a chameleon throughout every week. And basically, once they get to a Halloween and then Thanksgiving, they really kind of become what they're going to be, it seems like. John, we'd like to ask you about the Miami Dolphins and what they're doing right now. And there's been a lot of criticism against them, and especially Ryan Clark came out and really kind of hammered them for, you know, being unethical and not giving their players a chance to be put in a good spot, even as far as safety is concerned, for what they're doing. But there's another side that says, look, I mean, this is what you need to do if you really want to stay out of the mediocrity that they've been in. So where do you fall on exactly what Miami is doing right now?
I agree with Ryan Clark 100%. I think it's an abomination what they're doing, and it's stupid. This thing is going to go like the Cleveland Browns, if not worse. And here's why. I mean, you know the five main positions, and five of the hardest positions to be able to get. Okay, their quarterback. Okay, they're drafting one next year, so we'll give them credit for that. They'll get the first pick in the draft and their pick of the quarterbacks in a good quarterback draft. You know, left tackle. How tough is that to get nowadays? Because normally, if the best left tackle is going to be in the top 10 of the draft, and all these choices are not going to be in the top 10. Then you've got your pass rusher. You know, then you've got your cornerback and your wide receiver. Well, guess what? They got rid of all of them. I mean, sure, they have Xavien Howard. I was just counting up. They've. I don't know if they made a transaction today. In fact, I think they did. So, but
they claim
today,
Taco Charlton off
waivers.
They have
14 new players. Okay, yeah, so they've now got 15 new players since the last cut on August 31st. 17 new it's 15 new players. So that means they came out of camp with only 38 players. And you don't know how these guys are going to be fitting in or anything else. To me, it's a disaster. And they're the ones trading them all away. They'll get the draft choices, but it's almost like Oakland. You're not going to be able to get the equal of some of the players, the top players that you've traded away.
Biblically bad, maybe they should do this in twos. John, how about Jalen Ramsey?
So too. Yeah.
Do you think Jalen Ramsey gets traded? Maybe even by tomorrow?
I do, yeah.
I do too.
No, Friday, yeah, because after the game, I think that Kansas City or Philadelphia is going to step up and get something done. Now, not for two first-round picks. I just don't see that. I do think that something's going to happen because he's too good of a player, and this is an opportunity that you can't turn down if you're going to be going all in. And if you're Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes, you're all in. If you're Philadelphia with Carson Wentz, you're all in. So, no, I think one of those two teams is going to end up with him.
And New Orleans, you have the New Orleans sideline this week for Saints Seahawks, and it's now Teddy Bridgewater there. What's your outlook now on the Saints with Breeze out?
I still think they can make the playoffs. I mean, you know, what ends up happening is that the division still might be a little bit easier. I mean, they've gone, because again, I thought they were the number one seed. And I still think that, you know, their move to get Teddy Bridgewater is something close to what the Eagles did when they get Nick Foles. So I think they can survive, and I think he can be a 500 quarterback. So if they can get through six games and be 4-4, I still think they can come back and salvage a 9-10 win season with Drew Brees. So I'm not writing them off, and I still think they can be difficult because, again, there's so much talent on that team. You know, I had them actually beating the Patriots in the Super Bowl. So what this means, and of course, this is, I mean, they're not going to make the Super Bowl this year. But what's going to end up happening is that I still think they can win division, get a wild card, get into the playoffs, and maybe win a game or two. But they're going to, if they make the playoffs, they're not going to be a number one seed. They're not going to be a number two seed. They're going to be a number three or a number four. And that means you have to win three road games to get to the Super Bowl, and that probably won't happen.
All right. John, nice to talk to you. We'll do this again next week, of course.
Thank you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.